Today's Bible reading is from 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 1 to 14. Jonathan attacks the Philistines. One day, Jonathan, son of Saul, said to the young man bearing his armour, "Come, let's go to the Philistine outpost on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah, under a pomegranate tree in Migron. With him were about 600 men, among whom was Ajar, who was wearing an ephod. He was a son of Ichbod's brother, Ahitub, son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh. No one was aware that Jonathan had left. On each side of the pass that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One was called Bozez, and the other Sina. One cliff stood to the north towards Michmash, and the other to the south towards Gibeah. Jonathan said to the young armour bearer, "Come, let's go over to the outpost of these uncircumcised fellows. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few." "Do all that you have in mind," his armour bearer said. "Go ahead, I am with you, heart and soul." Jonathan said, "Come then, we will cross over towards the men and let them see us. If they say to us, 'Wait there until we come to you,' we will stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' we will climb up, because that will be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands. So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. "Look," said the Philistines, "the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes they are hiding in." The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan and his armour-bearer, "Come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson." So Jonathan said to the armour-bearer, "Climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet and with his armour-bearer right behind him. The Philistines fell before Jonathan and his armour-bearer followed and killed behind him. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armour bearer killed some 20 men in an area of about half an acre.
Good stuff. Thanks, Tony. I said to him, I said, "It's a nice, easy reading, no difficult words." It's horrible when you get up the front, you see those ones, you think, "How is it? How does it go?" Thank you, Tony. Just thought this morning, it's time for us to revisit what we're here for. It's September, which is the start of our church year. It tends to run as schools do from September through to June, July. We then have the summer kind of virtually with everything sort of just going into holiday mode. And then we pick up at September. Had a busy start to the month one way or another, haven't we? Lots of different things going on. People here and there. And I figured that it may well be this Sunday before we kind of all get back together again. And which is pretty true. It's great to see you all here this morning. What I'd like to do then is just for us to pause for a moment today and just think, what's our vision? What are we here for? What is it all about? What does Witten Baptist Church exist for? Why is it here? What's God's purpose for us? That is really important for us to keep in mind. And I trust by the grace of God. The reason for that will become apparent as I go through. What I'd like to do this morning is to share with you, first of all, a story and an illustration that I shared on at least a couple of occasions. You may or may not remember it. I think you probably will, because it's one of those ones that tends to stick in your mind. It's the case of the lifeboat stations in the little island up here in Nantucket. Off the northeast coast of Massachusetts, United States. If this means anything to you, New York will be down here. Okay, so that's Long Island, and you've got Connecticut up here, and this area around here is Massachusetts. So it's that little island there that we're thinking about this morning. We go back as we start to the mid 1700s. At that time, the New World, as that area of America was then known, was becoming a haven for people to go and visit, not visit, but to set up home. A big trade from Europe, people starting to go over there and set up home in the New World. Lots of new trade going on between the New World and England and Europe. A lot of boat traffic, and the boat traffic would come down the coast and it would kind of hit America at Nantucket Island area. It was an area that was known for high winds and storms, but Nantucket itself, around this area around here, was very, very shallow. A lot of sandbanks, which weren't immediately apparent to the sailors. And if as a captain of the ship didn't know, they would very often get too close to the island, get the ship stuck on a sandbar, where it would then break up. It's an area that's known for storms. You may have heard of Cape Cod, which you can see on there. It's often come up in the news because of storms and that kind of thing. A lot of ships got blown onto the sandbars off Nantucket Island. This is the mid-1700s. The residents of the island began to realize that what sometimes happens was that because the ships were foundering so close to the land, that sometimes some of the sailors were able to swim and make it to land, make it to safety. But because the land, the little island, was so uninhabited and so bleak, having got to land, many of them died of exposure. They died of weakness. They died of cold. And they died of starvation because there wasn't anybody around to help them. And so the residents of the island came up with this idea. They bandied together and they decided that they would build some little huts. And in the huts that were going to be dotted around the coastline, they would put some basic rations. They would put a blanket or a few blankets. They would put a stove. They would put some dry firewood and something to light it with. They would put some basic food rations and they would keep it replenished each week, so that those who made it to shore from the shipwrecks would be able to go into one of these little huts and find refuge, regain their strength, put on some dry clothing before they struck out to try and find some civilization. They became known as huts of refuge. Not long after that, they also realized, the people living on the island, realized that not only did people manage to get to shore, but there were a lot of others that didn't manage to get to shore. Even though the shipwrecks were not that far out, many of the sailors weren't able to make it. And so it wasn't long before they added to the little hut, they added a lifeboat. And here's a picture of the kind of hut that it was. This has been obviously from the last century, so it's a little bit more modern, but that was the idea. You can see next to the boat, next to the hut, is a lifeboat. And so they started to have the lifeboats. And when there was a storm, when the weather was bad, they would man that lifeboat. That lifeboat station, those little huts of refuge, 24 hours a day, they would have somebody looking out over the coast for shipwrecks. And when they found one, when they saw one, they would go out in their little lifeboat. It became known as the Massachusetts Humane Society. And their job, their existence, was to save people. That was what they were there for. That was the only reason they existed, was to save people who were in danger, save people who needed help. They had a little motto. You have to go out, but you don't have to come back. And you can go to a museum in Nantucket Island, or you can read it online if you can't afford to go over there. I read it online this week. And there's a whole section in their archives of the rules and regulations and the determination they had to have to try and go and save people. It said things like, you've got to do everything you can, and they list the things that they should try. You only don't put out if there is absolutely zero chance of salvation, of saving the people. In other words, you have to do everything you can. You've got to go out. You're not thinking about yourself. You don't think about your safety, your own personal safety. If you are there, you have to go out. But you don't have to come back. That was the thing that they were saying. They risked their lives. They gave themselves voluntarily for people they'd never met, for faces they'd never seen, and for names of people they might never know. And so they carried on for a while, until over time things changed, and what would become known as the U.S. Coast Guard was formed. And it was formed by people who were professionals, well-trained, with good equipment. And after a while, it became, you know, the people who were manning these little volunteer lifeboats said, look, let's leave it to the professionals. We're giving our time. It's dangerous. These people are well-equipped. They're well-trained. They do it better than us. Let's let them do it. And so they stopped manning the little huts. They stopped putting in the blankets and the firewood. They stopped looking out in the storms for people who were in danger and ships that had run aground. They stopped sending out people to rescue others. And yet they couldn't bring themselves to disband. In fact, the Massachusetts Humane Society still exists today, except they are not in the life-saving business. They have meetings and they give out awards. They have little medals that they give out to people who have done acts of bravery, who've contributed well to the community and given community service. They get together for dinners. They enjoy each other's company. They talk to each other about things that other people have done, except they don't do it themselves. They haven't got stories that they can swap of what they have done, the adventures that they've had, the dangers that they've encountered as they've sought to rescue other people. They're not in the life-saving business anymore. You may remember that story that I've told you before. But it is a powerful story to me because it's a reminder for us of the church, of what we're here for. Because we must never, ever forget that our number one calling, the reason why we're here on earth, is that we're here to be one of these. We're here to be a lifeboat station. We're here to be a hut of refuge. Looking out for those in danger, going out to reach them, and welcoming them. If any of them should just stumble in by themselves, and they do sometimes, they're walking past the gate. They're walking past the church here. And some people have just felt compelled to come in. We exist to welcome those people in, to put a blanket of God's love around them, to give them some spiritual sustenance, something that will revive them, to give them hope, something that will change their lives before we send them on their way again in service for the Lord. And if they won't turn in on their own accord, then we're to go out, sending out the lifeboat, because there are people around us who are in desperate need with shipwrecked lives, and often they don't even know it. But we're to go to be reaching out for them. Jesus himself said that he has come to seek and to save those who are lost. And he's left us on earth to continue that same work. Just before he left, he said to the disciples, and by virtue of the disciples, to us as well, go into all the world and make disciples. Now, we could stop and think, well, about making disciples. But the point is, you can't make disciples until you've got converts. So the key word there is to go. We have to go. And we must never, ever forget the going of the church. We mustn't lose sight of that priority. We must not become people who merely talk about the gospel, who talk about the goodness of God, who talk about saving people, who praise up others who do it, who support them maybe with some money or some prayers, but don't do it ourselves. God forbid that we should ever become one of these. I don't mean to offend Robin because I know he loves his yachts, but a church must never become a yacht club, where we come for our recreation, where we come to meet people who like the same things as we do, who think the same way, where it's safe for us, where everything is nice and neat and everything is in a little row, isn't it? Isn't that a lovely picture there? And man, look at those yachts in the background. You know, there's some serious money going on there. But you go to a yacht club and they've all got their berths and they're all lined up one after another. That's not what church is about. We're a lifeboat station and not a yacht club. The inherent danger is that the longer we're in the hut ourselves, the less inclined we are to want to go out. And churches all too often, all too easily, and I'm saying this morning because I don't want us to do it. I'm not saying we're in danger. I'm not saying we're doing it, but I want to make sure that we don't. Prevention is better than cure, isn't it? You know, I want us to be ahead of what's happening. I want us to make sure that we don't, we recognize the dangers, that we don't fall into being a humane society where we stop going out and where we just become a little club for ourselves. Now, let me tie this into 1 Samuel 14, which Tony read for us. The Lord spoke powerfully to me through this passage in the last week. How does what I've just said tie into the scriptures? Well, you can see a general kind of thing, but I want to make it more specific this morning. God's people in this passage have just made Saul their king, their very first king. It was a bad move for them. And after a bright start, things went downhill for them as a nation very quickly. In the part of the story that we read together this morning, King Saul has chosen his very best 3,000 soldiers to stay with him and to defend the land. The rest of the army of the day, he stood down. Not long after that, the country's old adversary, the Philistines, come out to battle. They mass on the other side of the valley to where Saul and his 3,000 men are. But there was a lot more than 3,000 of the Philistines. If you were to read the story of this in chapter 13, you would find in verse 5 they're described as soldiers as numerous as the sand on the seashore. Saul had 3,000 soldiers. The Philistines had 3,000 charioteers, as well as the foot soldiers, the cavalry, which would have been hugely more, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. Not surprisingly, the bravado and the backslapping of Saul's men quickly starts to disappear. And we read, it's a humorous account, really, humorous if it wasn't so sad, that they go to hide behind bushes. Saul's army starts to just disintegrate. They're hiding behind thickets. They're hiding in the trees. They're hiding in the caves. They're looking for pits and bits in the ground, hollows in the ground where they can hide because they're afraid of the enemy. And by the end of this little episode, recorded for us in chapter 13, there is just 600 men left with Saul. And those 600 men, it says that their hands and knees were shaking. They were terrified. These were bad times for the land. Still in chapter 13, you could read how the Philistines had pretty much taken control of it. They would send their terrorist raiding armies in, and the people lived in fear. The Philistines had taken all the metalwork and had stopped all the blacksmiths in the country. If the people wanted to have one of their farm implements sharpened, if they wanted to have a knife sharpened or a sickle, you know, the scythes sharpened, they would have to go to the Philistines, and they would have to pay the Philistines to sharpen their implements. They weren't allowed to have swords. It says, in fact, that the only swords in the land was that which Saul and his son Jonathan had. The army was in a pretty poor state. They were bad days. And that's the context for the passage that Tony read. You see, Saul's son Jonathan gets it in his mind to operate on a different level to his father and the quivering soldiers that remained with him. Jonathan looked across and he saw the army on the other side, and he saw one particular outpost, probably with about 250 soldiers in it. And he says to his young armor bearer, "Come on, let's go over there and take on the outpost." Do you know, I love what the armor bearer says. He's only a young lad. He's not old. He's not experienced. He's not a soldier. And he says, "Jonathan, if you want to do it, go for it. And I'm going to be with you, heart and soul." And so they went. Jonathan's not so stupid as to think he can do it without God. And so he says to his armor bearer, he says, "Look, we need to get God in this. We need to make sure it's right. We'll set this little thing." And Tony read the passage where he said, "Look, if they say to us, stay where you are, we'll come to you. We'll just leave it and, you know, we'll be out of here. If, however, they say to us, come on over to us and we'll show you, then we'll know God is with us and we've got to go and take them on." And so when they stood up in the morning, they stood up so that the Philistine outpost could see them. And the Philistines say, come on over and we'll teach you a lesson. Jonathan goes out. He steps out in faith with God. And what happens next is nothing short of a miracle. Basically, let's sum it up as God took over. The Philistines fall back in mayhem. Jonathan kills 20 with his own sword in no time. The rest of the Philistine army just fall back in mad panic. Across the valley, behind this little skirmish that's going on, the noise of the growing panic among the Philistines comes to the ears of Saul and his men. And they look out and see what's happening. They do a quick count up. Well, who's not here? They work out it's Jonathan. But when they see what's happening, they say, come on, let's go over and join them. And so the rest of the army, these men who've been quivering wrecks, these men who've been hiding in the trees, these men who've been hiding in the caves, these men who'd been doing anything but engage the enemy, suddenly find themselves energized and they're out there. But there's more. There were people from the Israelites who previously had made their home among the Philistines. They'd given up. They said, this is a, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And they'd gone and made their home and they were living among the Philistines. Now, they were still Israelites. They were still God-fearing people. They'd not lost the identity of who they were and who they believed in, but they'd basically given up. They didn't think that God could do anything. When Jonathan and his little young armor bearer went out, and when Saul, the king, took courage from his young son and this young, obscure armor bearer, and when the men saw what was happening and went to join it, the other people who'd made their homes among the Philistines also came out of the woodwork. And they started to fight as well. And a huge victory was won that day by the Lord. That's verse 23, if we'd have read on, it says, and the Lord won a great victory that day. And all it took was one man. One young man, Jonathan, backed by an even younger man, the armor bearer, who were prepared to step out in faith for the Lord. It was a crazy thing to do. It was ridiculous. It was against all the odds. But you know, nothing is too hard for the Lord. That was the text that we started with. Nothing is too hard for the Lord. Which makes me ask, as we start the new year as a church together, who will man the lifeboats? Who will go out to attack the Philistines? Who will be the armor bearers of those who go out? Who will be the supporters? Who will say, we're with you? Come on, let's go. Let's do it. Who will be diligent in looking after the huts? Who's going to be diligent in making sure that the supplies are in for the care for those who come and find refuge in the hut of God's family? Who will be a Jonathan? Who will be the unsung armor bearer who'll help and support him? Will it be you? As we move forward, will you say yes? I don't want to just sit and talk about things. I don't want to just be giving money to help other people. I'll do my bit. I don't want to just kind of look at other churches and look at what God is doing out abroad and, you know, some of these wonderful things. I want to be part of what God is doing here in our little outpost. What does it mean in practice? Well, it could be simply committing yourself to pray for people. Becoming an armor bearer. To hold up the shield of faith over those who are on the battlefront. And when I say doing that, you see, Jonathan's armor bearer had to stand alongside him. He had to be with him. It wasn't something he could do at a distance. He had to be in the thick of it. I want to ask, are there those of you who'll say, but I can't do this and I can't do that. Can you hold up the shield of faith? Can you hold up the shield of prayer? Can you bring the battle to the Lord? Can you be committed and determined in this spiritual ministry of prayer? That's the armor-bearing stuff. And believe me, as one who's often been called to go out like Jonathan, it's good to know that I've got some armor bearers with me. It's mutual support. It's ministry of the helps and of support and encouragement. Will you join us in prayer? Will you commit yourself to do that? Maybe you could come out on a Tuesday night. You know, just change your schedule around a little bit. Have tea a little bit earlier or dinner a little bit earlier. Could you come and join us on a Tuesday? It's such an encouragement for those of us who are there to think, you know, we're there and we're in this together. We're engaging in the battle. We're engaging spiritual warfare with the heavenly places. If you can, could you have a think about it? Or it could be that you can do a bit more than pray. And that's not downplaying the role of prayer, but I'm just, you know, recognizing the fact that prayer is not a physical thing, but there are other physical things. Maybe you could get one of... I've lost it. I need to come over here. Maybe you would have the courage this morning to take one of these. We've got about 75, I think, of these little leaflets. They're called The Remedy. And basically, it's a Christian tract. It's the best one I've seen for a long time. Alan asked at a church members meeting, could we give some tracts out with the little leaflets? You know, we didn't do it. And I'll tell you why. Because I couldn't find anything that I was really comfortable giving into people's hands. This is one I am. And our plan, the plan is that we'll get some of these to put in the next set of leaflets that we give around the area. But before we do that, could you have the courage to take one of these and give it to someone in the next week or so? To think thoughtfully, who can I give this to? It might be somebody easy. It could be somebody in your family. It could be that you just leave it on the coffee table. Or it could be a neighbor. It could be somebody that you see at the doctor's surgery. It could be somebody that you see in Aldi's or the co-op. It could be somebody that you just go and see. Could you give them the courage? Pick up the courage, because they're lost. They need saving. Are we going to sit in our lifeboat station and not launch the lifeboat? You know, let's face it, these people, if we don't tell them, then either somebody else has got to, or we're saying, you can go to hell. That hurts to say that. But does it hurt enough for us to have the guts to give them something that the Lord might use? To start them thinking spiritually, because if they don't, the reality is that they are lost. So might be that's what you could do. But what about coming back to the huts of refuge? You know, supplying the warmth and the love and the friendship to others. Maybe transitioning from being a receiver to being a giver, to thinking about other people, giving to others. Giving love, encouraging with the Bible, taking time to make a visit, to go and call them, write them a card, send them a text, tweet them, whatever. Talk to someone. That's the best thing. Talk to someone in church. Rather than waiting for somebody to talk to you, go and talk to them. Or how about being really radical and saying, I'll become one of the lifeboat crew. Risking the wind and the waves and actually talking to someone in depth about Jesus. Taking the conversation to them. Transitioning a conversation and bringing Jesus into it. Listen to them. There will be opportunities. Because people are lost without Jesus. They're lost and they're dying. Not for life but for eternity. And if you listen to them, there's always something there. It might be that the family's going up. Because at the end of the day, the whole world's problems come back to the fact that people aren't following Jesus. It comes to the fact that they're not doing things Jesus' way. You know, the wages of sin is death. And that's what people are living with. You know, why do relationships founder? Because people sin. Why do we get into trouble? Because people sin. We make bad choices. You know, and the Bible has something to say about all of those things. So we can bring it round. And maybe just to say, you know, Jesus cares. Jesus understands. Why don't you come to church with us? Go out on the lifeboat. And who knows? You see, did it look likely that anybody was going to, that Jonathan and his armor bearer would have success? Did it look likely that they would start a snowball effect of victory for God? It was ridiculous odds. But nothing stops the Lord from saving by many or by few. And he can do it as easily through you as he can through Jonathan or his armor bearer or anybody else. Speaking of the church here, what are we about? We're a lifeboat station. We're not a yacht club. We've got to be a hut of refuge where people come in and feel warmth, love and compassion. Where people serve one another. Let's make sure that we don't lose that heart, that vision. So I want to ask you this morning, what are you doing? Could you do a bit more? Could you give yourself a bit more in prayer, in service, in ministry? It's not about doing. I'm not on a drive for doing. This is not a recruitment campaign. Do it together. Because people are dying for the want of hearing. There's a bundle of these over on the table to the right of the windows. Do take one. I expect them all to be gone by the... No, I don't. Take one if you can. Take more than one if you'd like. Just an easy opportunity for you. Let's just pause for a moment. And I want to give you the opportunity to think about how you can best play your part in the life-saving business. Now, some of you are working really hard and you're striving, and I want to encourage you to not give up, because God sees your work and he's pleased with it. Ask the Lord that maybe this week that he would lead you to an opportunity to speak for him to someone. You'd have the courage to step out and see what the Lord would do. Father, help us never to become introverted. Help us never to forget that we're a hut of refuge, that we are a lifeboat station. We're here to serve you. We're here to go into all the world to make disciples. You've left us here for that ministry above everything else. So help us each to do our utmost. And if we do that, then we can safely and easily trust you to do the rest, just like Jonathan did. Help us in this, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.